Pep Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to your Saturday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug Lamoury, Stephen Barrett, Stephen Means. We watched a full practice with a lot of scrimmage periods on Saturday morning. This is your special extra Saturday podcast. I think it will be in place of a Monday pod. So if you don't have a Monday pod, just re-listen to this thing. We saw a lot. We're going to run through all the guys that we want to talk about. We're going to start with Nathan Baird. Who do you want to talk about first?
I got two words for you, Doug. Tristan Gebbia. No. Let's talk about the quarterbacks. I was watching the quarterbacks. Actually, Tristan Gebbia, I thought, looked pretty good. I think the third spot is as good as it's been since I've been here, probably. Looked pretty solid. But obviously, this is our first chance to see Kyle McCord and Devin Brown in competitive situations, like scrimmage situations, facing a defense. It was something that in the early windows we saw, we hadn't got to see. And I thought a pretty tight day. You and I at one point kind of passed on the sideline there, and we're like, I don't really lean either way here. I think they're both having pretty similar days. And I thought Kyle McCord made some significant plays down the stretch. There was a play, they started one scrimmage period at the 50-yard line. The first play of that scrimmage, Kyle McCord did sort of like a pump fake to get Jordan Hancock to flinch a little bit and hit Jaden Ballard for a touchdown pass, one play, 50-yard drive. And then later, the next time through that series, he was rolling with the twos, and I thought made what was maybe the most important play of the day, because Ryan Day earlier this week was talking about eyes and talking about feet and talking about what do you do when a play doesn't go according to plan. And there was a play that started to break down a little bit. He got flushed out of the pocket, running to his right. While he's on the run, he has Dallin Hayden underneath as a guy he could just sort of check down to. And all those of us on the sideline were kind of saying, like, hey, why isn't he throwing it? And then because he saw Noah Rogers downfield and hit him for a long completion. And that, to me, was maybe what – it encapsulated a lot of what Ryan Day wants to see out of the quarterback position and how what it means to be making plays with your feet as a quarterback in this offense. So, again, small – pieces of data, but maybe important pieces of data. Ryan Day afterward, I asked him, you know, do you look at a day like this because you're mixing with ones and twos and who's out there and who's not? Is it results independent analysis that you're doing? And or is it what the team does regardless of what the quarterback does sometimes? Like, what is the team succeeding? And he said it's both, but that leading touchdown drives matters. That finishing, like getting in the end zone matters even on March 25th.
Counting things that matter. And again, so people have a sense of this, they kept score between the offense and the defense all day. And so in the end, it winds up being like 102 to 100 or something like that, that the offense comes out on top. But they're constantly announcing who's ahead, offense or defense, what's the score? So they get down at the end and they're in the red zone. And actually, the last section, they went with the ones and Devin Brown was with the ones. And the last things they did. But then they finished with the twos, and it was Kyle McCord and a bunch of freshman receivers in the backup offensive line. But it's like, hey, this is sort of the game on the line. And they run a play, it's like a read play, and Kyle McCord keeps it and scores the winning touchdown and is mobbed by the entire offense against the back wall, Stephen, and takes his helmet off, takes the football, and chucks it to the roof of the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And it was like, whoa, Kyle McCord just had a moment there. And then Ryan Day was like, ah, he was down. And they came back and they had like four finishes to this scrimmage, Stephen. But sometimes, you know, you can tell it mattered to these guys. And I thought, A, it's like, hey, when it's gut busting time here at the end, they had a quarterback run at the goal line. And then, by the way, when it worked, 40 guys mobbed Kyle McCord, and he seemed to have that moment. It was interesting to observe, Stephen.
Yeah, it was cool to see them be competitive, not just actually in football, but talking. I heard Jaden Ballard on multiple occasions talk about, no, he's not hurt, he just got burnt. I mean, JT Tuimoloau, after that play you're talking about with Kyle McCord, he's like, why is that, should that count? We can't test the quarterback. I should just be able to rock him with some expletives that I'm not going to get into here. But it was a back and forth. Every time we saw an explosive play, the entire offense is going, boom. It was just, they were having fun out there, and it got competitive. It was good to see them be competitive, but also get real information out of that. And that felt like a moment Kyle McCord getting rallied around. And I know it's early. Nobody's won this job yet, but that's the type of moment you look back on 6 months from now if he does lose this job of, hey, when did Kyle McCord start to separate himself and win the job? It's stuff like that.
I thought there were a couple of times, Nathan, when you sit and watch either of those guys and it's like, oh, there's a rip. So I got a nice like 12-yard rip just right in the guy's gut. And I also thought there were a couple times when because you weren't tackling the quarterbacks, but then there were sessions where like, hey, they're under pressure. Now they're scrambling. They're getting out of the pocket. So you're not going to tackle them, but it's not just two-hand touch. Hey, the play's over. And I did think there were a couple times where on the move, you could almost see not a lack of arm strength, but the ball didn't go exactly where they wanted it to go. It floated on him a little bit. And it's just a reminder of like, hey, maybe in that moment, like CJ Stroud against Georgia, he makes that throw. Right, Justin Fields at his peak in the against Clemson in that semifinal, he makes that throw. That one, when you get experienced quarterbacks at Ohio State with great receivers, they can make it look easy. And I did think there were moments, Nathan, where it's good to see them move around, but sometimes when they moved around, then it got away from them. And it's like, hey, maybe Jaden Ballard's open here. Oh, wait, the throw floated 3 yards out of bounds, and now you see a quarterback putting his hands on his helmet or a quarterback shouting out a naughty word because they're like, oh, I should have made that play. And like right now, neither of them, Nathan, are making all of those plays, which is to be expected, but which is a reminder of what they are moving on from when you have best versions of Justin Fields and CJ Stroud.
And there actually were a lot of, I thought proportionally to the plays that were called, I thought a lot of sacks kind of, and they weren't all sacks. Like you said, they're not live. They can't be contacted. But even not all the sacks were even a guy getting into the backfield and they blow it dead. There were just coverage sacks that were called by the coaches that a play was taking too long to develop. There was in a red zone period. One of the first things they did was a red zone all passing period, which I think is tougher for the offense because the defense knows all they're going to do is throw the ball. So that almost gives an advantage to the defense there. But they had 12 shots at it, six each, and they only got in one time on one of Devin Brown's attempts, and there was a play there where they scored a touchdown, but the defense got the points because the play took too long. They called that they just didn't give them credit for executing the play. So that was something, and I thought again at that time, at that last third of the practice, where we started to see some of those plays from Kyle McCord, and Devin Brown had his moments too. I'm not saying that this was like a knockout today, but there were more of those moments, I thought, when Devin Brown had the ball and more of the moments where Kyle McCord was leading touchdowns in that last third of the practice.
There was definitely a session where the final play of a session was Devin Brown eating it and taking a sack because nobody was open. Right. And they're not. So Emeka Egbuka and Julian Fleming, as people know, are not practicing. I don't think Xavier Johnson was out there today. And then Marvin Harrison got pulled out at the end, at least a little bit. So this is not the top shelf Ohio State receiving core. And I thought, Steven, at times you could almost feel like, hey man, nobody's getting open. But also there are those moments where, and if CJ Stroud was on this podcast right now, he would tell you, because he's telling the NFL, I throw guys open. They don't seem open, but I put the ball in a place where by the time the ball gets there, they are open. So I don't think they're quite there yet with some things either. And so guys, I think you do have two quarterbacks who are maybe a little bit more. The one play you cited with McCord, Nathan, right? Scrambling, sort of like, hey, it's a scramble drill. He makes an indication. The guy breaks his route down the field. McCord hits him. It's a beautiful play. There are other times where maybe it feels like they're waiting for the guy to be open before they make the throw. When it was getting tight in the red zone, you watch that and it's like, there's nobody to throw to. And there were also a couple throws I thought where McCord and Brown would put a ball up in the corner of the end zone. And some of these young receivers, you can just see like, well, that guy wasn't close to catching that, but it's also he had no idea what to do with his body to go up and try to make a play on the ball there. Or this guy, the quarterback put it in a spot, but the guy kind of got jammed up on his release and sort of was like, well, it's over, and couldn't fight through it. And then the ball looks like it's overthrown, but the quarterbacks are putting the ball, Steven, where Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to go make a play on that, where Chris Olave or Jackson Smith and Jigba or Emeka Egbuka is going to go make a play on that. So I do think it was a tough day for the receivers, or excuse me, for the quarterbacks in some way, Steven, because they were working with some younger guys who were just not always getting open, and then sometimes it makes you look not as good.
Yeah, I think you noticed it really when they would back off in zone, because they were mixing it up in a lot of these drills when they would go press, when they would go zone, because they do a little bit of that, all that. But also, I think you noticed it whenever it was like semi-scramble drill, because that's one thing I did like about today is they let it play out a little bit, whether it was McCord, Devin Brown, even Tristan Gebbia at times. They would let it play out to see where they would go with the ball, even going downfield some of that time. And to your point of when you don't win at the line of scrimmage, it was almost as if the initial route didn't work, I don't want to say guys gave up, but they just like didn't know what to do. And that's just part of being young and not really having a lot of chemistry with a quarterback. To say like Marvin Harrison, the play that they had against Georgia, the two plays touchdown catch he had against Georgia with CJ Stroud, that probably doesn't happen his second practice of spring when he first gets here with CJ Stroud, just because they don't have that level of chemistry. That's 2 years of work to get there. So it's a combination of all those things. It's young guys not really knowing what to do when things break down. I don't know if these quarterbacks, they didn't really necessarily wow me when it was, they had to hit it in windows and not necessarily the wide receiver just won at the line of scrimmage and press man coverage and they were beating the guy downfield. But then also it's just, you don't have chemistry and that it's going to be interesting. We get to do this one more time and then we get to do it in the spring game. I do wonder how much better it looks in the spring game, but then also how much better does it look in fall camp?
I thought there were
a couple times it felt like, go ahead, Nathan.
I was saying, I thought there were conspicuous absences from the receiver core. I thought you missed like not having Julian Fleming and Emeka Buka at times today. But also, we spend so much time thinking about and tracking like who's working with the ones, who had snaps with the ones as opposed to the twos. I start to wonder if the twos reps are a bigger part of this evaluation, because for some of the things that you're talking about, Doug, I mean, let's just remember, how did this season end? Like Ohio State's last possession last season, the players who were on the field for that were not necessarily the guys that they expected to have on the field for that last possession. But CJ Stroud still has to go out there and try to run an offense and get a team in the end zone. So I was keeping that in mind as I watched some of this stuff today, because there were definitely times where the guys that you would throw a pass to were not the guys that, as you said, would be the guys that you would hopefully throw a pass to. That's where that results independent analysis has to come in for the coaches. But at some point, though, you don't know who's going to be on the field for you. What can you do with what is available to you? How do you execute?
It was, and so they do ones and twos and threes in these scrimmage situations, mm-hmm. but then even it starts to get messed up sometimes.
Rotating.
So there was a snap one time where Jermaine Matthews was matched up on Marvin Harrison Jr. And it's like, okay, well, I don't know what that is, but that's a guy who just got here, who's a true freshman. We were saying, that's a guy who should be in high school against a guy who should be in the NFL. And actually, you know what? Jermaine Matthews had a pretty good rep on that play. They threw the ball at Marvin Harrison. It was incomplete. Jermaine Matthews was all over him. Maybe a little handsy, but it's like he didn't back down from Marvin Harrison Jr. There was another rep where it felt like there was a group of plays where they weren't getting much done in the passing game. And then Cade Stover, I think, was wide open down the field for a big play. And he beat a walk-on safety, who's probably their 13th safety. And Perry Elliott like came on the field with his arms outstretched. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. But also, like, he's sort of saying, like, what happened to a guy who is never going to play, right? So they're... You get off on some of these things that where it's not an even matchup, but also a lot of time, you know, you had Marvin Harrison Jr. versus Denzel Burke. But to keep it on the quarterbacks, I did think there were times, Nathan, where when something's not there, Devin Brown will scoot. Mm-hmm. And now they're not hitting him, but like there were at least a couple plays where it was like nothing. Cause like clearly it's like if there's a clock, there's like you only have so long. And Devin Brown, when in doubt, which is what a lot of young quarterbacks do, right? That's the whole thing. Do you get to your second read or is your second read, let's get out of here and go? Devin Brown got out of there and went a little more often, I think, than Kyle McCord did. But by the way, when Devin Brown gets out of there and goes, he can go a little bit.
That's not a super easy thing to evaluate in settings like this, again, when things aren't live. So when do things get blown dead? But yeah, I mean, he's got that gift. He's got that ability. And I think he has it more than McCord. So we've talked about like the balance between how much is that going to be a determining factor here versus being able to use your feet, but then ultimately do something in the passing game with it. And I think that for both of these guys, it's still a bit of a work in progress, but I think he's got a little bit farther to go based on what we saw today, but it's there. And I think the thing with Devin Brown, again, considering we saw for 2/3 of this, I thought it was pretty much even between those two guys. You see where you see what could emerge from him over these next 10 practices, over a summer, over into the preseason, depending on how long they stretch out this decision. there's definitely something there that Common Core is going to have to stay on at an elite level in order to win this job.
So before we wrap up the quarterbacks, and we do want to get to a bunch of other guys that we want to talk about at least a little bit, I thought in the end it was not like a spectacular explosion of quarterback play. But if you're asking yourself, hey, they got to pick one of these two guys to start, I thought it looked like, well, those are two guys that have some stuff, that they have time to get all the way there. But I thought it was very reasonable of, is there an Ohio State starting quarterback on this field right now? Heck yeah, there's an Ohio State starting quarterback on the field. You can see, especially when they get their guys, right? I don't know, Nathan, like in general, was it what you would want to see at this point in a quarterback battle? Practice 6 is out of 15, as Ryan Day said.
Well, again, and that's one of the things we've talked about all along, is that really they want to come out of this with two starting quarterbacks, because you might need two starting quarterbacks. And there's a nuance to that depending on which one you pick, because maybe the second guy isn't around, I guess. But no, I agree the same. I feel the same way. I did not look at this and see guys who were overmatched, guys who were not ready for this, especially when you project it ahead. When you say, well, what can this be after 10 more practices this spring? What can it be after another offseason of development? What can it be by the time they're doing game prep for Indiana in the middle of August? Like all those things, you can project it to where that guy is leading a productive offense again.
I still have this thing. You get jammed up. I didn't get everything written I want to write. I'm sitting here watching the Ohio State women play UConn in women's basketball and have this story that I'm going to have to end up writing as a post-game thing. You just get busy. But one of the things that I really have just been like trying to absorb this week is that we were in there today on a Saturday on the same field, in the same spot, under the same roof, where on Wednesday, CJ Stroud and Paris Johnson and DeJuan Jones and Jackson Smith and Jigba were putting on a show for the NFL. And it's just a reminder of, we're all in this one place, and it is the past and the present and the future colliding, right? And that's just the world that you live in at Ohio State football. And I don't want us to take it for granted, but there is a difference of, I know CJ Stroud was throwing on air, but we talked about this after the pro day stuff. CJ Stroud moving around and throwing a football, and Kyle McCord and Devin Brown moving around and throwing a football, it's just graduate level versus undergrad, which is what this is supposed to be. But I just think you all have to have that lens, because that's not what CJ Stroud looked like 2 years ago. But man, CJ Stroud's been working with his quarterbacks coach and out in California, and like he's been locked in on just this for a long time. But it is a reminder of that. But I thought that was a pretty good day of, listen, if we came out of there thinking like, I don't know, we'd tell you, right, Nathan? We'd tell you if we thought, listen, it's early, but I don't know. And this was not an I don't know kind of quarterback Saturday.
No interceptions today. No throws that I thought, what was that? There were some throws where I would have made a different decision there, I suppose. But nothing where I was like, not a lot where you're just like, you don't think that guy knew what he was supposed to be doing on that play. It's just a process that needs to be refined.
I thought, if anything, we saw improved versions of what they are, which is always a good thing. If they're whatever you are as a quarterback, as long as you're building on that. And I felt like that was the case. I didn't, in the periods I got to watch quarterbacks, because they're doing defensive stuff with them as well, I never felt like when Devin Brown took off, it wasn't like premature. It didn't feel like he was seeing ghosts the way it was last year, which I thought was good. The fact that, you know, Kyle McCord was on the move was good. I did think, though, to push back a little bit, I don't think necessarily the decisions were bad, but there were definitely some throws where the timing wasn't necessarily there, and so it ended up being a worse throw than it should have been. I remember off the top of my head, Devin Brown threw one to Cade Stover going down the seam, you know, that tight end seam that they love to run, but he was late on it, and so it was like so far behind Cade Stover. And in a real game, that should have been a touchdown, but instead it ends up just being an incomplete. And as he's running back, Keenan Bailey's like, that's going to be on you quicker. Don't worry about it. You did your job. So I think, but that's just stuff that, once again, you're going to learn as you get more reps and you get more reps. I agree with you guys. I didn't see anything that gave me pause of concern. More just guys are getting better at what they are.
Yeah, I think young quarterbacks, it's hard to anticipate as much, right? They're waiting for something to happen and then throwing, and then you're late. There were a couple plays, even like some comeback routes and stuff, where defensive backs are getting hands on balls because they're kind of waiting for the guy to come out of his break, and then they're throwing it. And it's like, nope, Davison Igbinosen is going to be all over that. Like you'd got to throw that earlier. So I think there were moments of that, but in general, I thought it was where you would expect a quarterback competition to be one third of the way through the spring. All right. When we come back, we're going to hit on a bunch of other guys. We'll do it next on Buckeye Talk. Doug, Nathan, and Steven back as we record. Bryce Sensabaugh just announced that he's leaving for the NBA draft. He doesn't mean he's all the way gone, but he's going to go through the process, which again is no surprise to anybody. You can read Steven writing about that at cleveland.com/OSU. And I will tell you that I thought there was something that to me was the most important thing that happened in this scrimmage that is not directly related to players. And we'll talk about that at the end. But what we'll do now is Steven, name a player that you want to talk about. We're not going to go as long on anybody else as we did on the quarterbacks, but where do you want to go right now, Steven?
Yeah, let's just start with the Sonny Styles conversation. He was with the twos initially, but as you guys said, guys were kind of rotating in. There were times where he was out there with the runs, but he was the backup bandit behind Josh Proctor, and he was just making plays that you would expect for a five-star who's got all the talent in the world, all the expectation in the world to be playing. You know, we talked about this in our video, and I'll talk about it here. There was one play where I think defined what Sonny Styles is. It's the length, it's the speed, it's the athleticism. He's one of those guys where even when he's beat, he's not beat. And he got beat on a go route by Caleb Brown because he's on a slot receiver, which as a bandit, I mean, that's not necessarily where you're always going to be, but that's where he ended up in that situation. He got beat on the go route, but Devin Brown underthrew it just enough that he didn't even have to, like, Sonny Styles didn't even have to turn his head. He just put his hands up and he's like hit him in the back of the head. And Devin Brown had to learn from that. So next time that situation happened, he actually put it out a little bit further and it ended up being a completion. But I was keeping tallies of who was getting their hands on balls because Ryan Day had been talking about that a lot. And I think I tallied Sonny Styles with maybe three or four plays where he was getting his hands on his ball and being on the ball and being disruptive.
It does feel like, so you're right, guys are moving around, but it is pretty set right now. The three starting safeties most of the time are Lathan Ransom, Josh Proctor, and Cam Martinez. And the safeties with the twos most of the time are Sonny Styles, Kai Stokes, and Jihad Carter, the transfer from Syracuse. And there's a part of me, Nathan, where if you just said, we're going to flip that, I'd be like, okay, it's not that the twos I'm saying they're better right now than the ones, but if those are your second team safeties, that's pretty good. And as Steven said, Sonny Styles is a guy who if you're counting plays made in a scrimmage like that, he's going to be pretty high on that list. But I just, you know, for the most part, Josh Proctor is really roaming around out there. Josh, like if you think like, why did Josh Proctor come back? I don't know why he came back. He's out there a lot with the ones and he seems very comfortable and looks pretty good. But as we know, Nathan, we've talked about it, six deep at safety pretty easily, which is a good thing.
Yeah, we saw this coming. I mean, that this was going to be a pretty tough competition, especially when Carter committed. Then that really opened up a really competitive spring, I thought, for this room. And remember, is this a couple years ago? Think back 2021, Josh Proctor gets hurt, like one injury in a safety group when you weren't even really – relying on your safeties as much at that time was kind of a catastrophe. Really left them flat-footed as to what they could do next. They didn't have somebody that was on deck that was ready to play at that level. And now you see that. And I think it's good for both the inevitable need that you're going to have to go beyond a first string at some point. But that, again, just from a competitive standpoint, we've seen too many times in the last couple of years where there hasn't been enough competition deep on the roster at spots on this defense where you could just say, well, who else are they going to play? That's kind of the guy who's going to have to be. And I think you could say that probably about, once Jordan Hancock got hurt, that was definitely true of the cornerback group last year. And you're starting to see now on defense, I think at every position where there's guys who are that second string and maybe even kind of fighting to be second string, who are impressive and or making plays and kind of standing out in the glimpses that we get. And that's, I think, critical for what they want to do long term.
I think with what I saw today, the way this seems to be headed with that group, I don't see a reason why they couldn't play six if they want to and just rotate guys back to. Now, whether they do it or not, that's a whole different conversation. Obviously, that's always the thing with Ohio State. But I do think by the time you get to fall camp with the way some of these guys flash, but also had some bad moments because it's the fifth practice of spring, I think they can get to six guys where Perry Eliano can just throw one of those guys out there and be comfortable.
Yeah, which goes back to Jim Knoll says he likes to have guys stay on the field on the back seven. So, like, what does that mean? There's some good players. Good to have too many good players, but it's interesting to watch that. And there's a part of me, Steven, when those twos are out there, and I know everybody does it a little bit differently, both Sonny Styles and CJ Hicks kind of had the jerseys cut off, so their abs were sticking out. And they're just like these long, lean, young defensive players with the twos. And part of me is just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Can we just put them on the, like, right, Steven? You just, it's just how guys, like, how they walk around. And they walk, you know, I made a big deal. In 14 and 15, when you would often have lined up on one side of the field, like in a row, it would go Joey Bosa on the edge, Darren Lee at linebacker, and Von Bell at safety right behind him. And it's like, it's kind of like being strong up the middle of baseball. It's like, how are you supposed to do anything on this side of the field when you're dealing with Joey Bosa, Darren Lee, and Von Bell? But a lot of times, Darren Lee and Von Bell would wind up paired with each other. And it's just like guys in space that are not going to let you do anything. And there's a, when Sonny Styles and CJ Hicks are near each other on the field, Steven, I just like, I just want that to me is what Ohio State defense is supposed to look like. And we might not get there all the way yet right now, maybe not in September, but I don't know, Steven. Maybe it's just me. Or did you get the little neurons firing when it's like, oh, CJ Hicks and Sonny Styles are within 4 feet of each other?
CJ Hicks looks like he's a dude, and Sonny Styles just confuses me. He looks like a basketball player, but he's an elite football player. I think CJ Hicks had a good day today. I think the problem that CJ might run into is Steel Chambers, at least today, wasn't doing just enough to keep his starting spot. I thought he was the best defensive player today with the way he was making plays. So if that's the conversation we're now having, it's not just, oh, Steel Chambers is good enough to just keep his job. Well, why don't you just play the younger guy whose ceiling is higher? If Steel Chambers is doing what I saw him do today, he had like 2 or 3 sacks. He had some pass breakups. He had some hard hits. He was kind of, well, sacks by their metric, but they were like
one of his sacks was like they blitzed him and
I know.
Are we blitzing yet? Did anyone pick him up? And it was like he blitzed. Yeah. No one touched him. He was standing next to the quarterback, and they were like, "There's a sack." It's like, okay, well, I don't know.
there's definitely some things that happens with Jim Knowles where he makes a call, and I feel like Brian Hartline and Ryan Dare are like, "Oh, we're doing this." I thought we were just, you know, I don't want to say taking it slow, but I didn't realize we were going full throttle out here today. But I just thought he had a good day in a way that made it make sense in my head why maybe CJ Hicks doesn't overtake him this year. Because CJ Hicks was around the ball just as much as Steel Chambers. It's just Steel Chambers was making the play while it felt like CJ Hicks was part of the gang tackling in a thud world.
I mean, you go back to Steel Chambers' pick against Georgia. He had a play in coverage where he just like, bang, like knocked the ball away on like a little trying to flip to a tight end. And it's like, man, that guy can cover sometimes. All right, let's go to another guy. I'm going to jump on Steven's side of the ball because we've been divided up. Nathan watched the quarterbacks. I watched the rest of the offense. Steven watched the defense. But I don't care because I'm one of my bust for Kenyatta Jackson is warming up. Mm-hmm. So this is the second year defensive end, number 97. And he does that pass rush where he has both hands down, which is like Nick Bosa. So I was getting some Nick Bosa vibes from him a little bit. And I think he had back-to-back sacks beating the right tackle around the edge on consecutive plays. And when he was on the field when the scrimmage ended, and he just wound up like pursuing a play and was just like wound up on his butt sitting on the ground, just gassed. Like he had nothing left. And I just said for 2 seconds afterward, I said, man, you put it all out there today. He was like, yeah. So I thought there were two things there. One is that guy played hard for 2 hours. Two is that's what it takes. So here's the guy, right? Okay, that's a taste of it, but you have this ability and you can see it. If you want an Ohio State edge rusher who has the speed and the bend to beat tackles around the edge, I think this is the guy to bet on. Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, great, great, great. But this is conjuring some old images of Ohio State defensive ends. It was one scrimmage, but this is a guy that we thought might be coming. Nathan, I think he is coming. And I really liked what he saw today. And then, right, he was asked about Kenyatta Jackson and said, Paris Johnson and Kenyatta Jackson last year would go sit for an hour on the bench after practice. And Paris Johnson would help Kenyatta Jackson. Here's an offensive tackle saying, hey, defensive end, I'm going to help you be better. I'm going to tell you how things are from my side of things. And that Paris Johnson took Kenyatta Jackson under his wing. I didn't know that. So I was like, okay, that's like I was walking around the lot talking to the dealer about, I think I like this bus. And after Ryan Day said that, I was ready to go in and sign the paperwork for the Kenyatta Jackson bus. We all saw the same thing, Nathan. The guy flashed.
Yeah, I was definitely on alert this spring that maybe Kenyatta Jackson is the next Mike Hall, who somebody drove the bus for last year and turned out to be pretty
right. Now, listen, you two. Now, listen, so just could you just – I'm trying. I get first pick on the bus this year because you guys both, like, crushed. Steven was like, I don't know, is Marvin Harrison Jr. the greatest receiver of all time? And it's like, yes, he is. And it's like, oh, is Mike Hall ready to dominate? Yes. Is Court Williams going to get on the field, Doug? No. So, listen, I need a good bus year. My buses have been breaking down. So – I know everybody knows you did a great job picking your bus people a year ago, and I did not as good of a job. So just let me – don't take Mike. I said, Mike, he's on my bus.
Understood. And Mike all had a good day today too, I thought, at times. But Kenyatta Jackson, I think on a day like this, again, it's like that results-independent analysis where – because when you're going up against this offensive line, and that was the thing that Day was asked too. It's like, well, you're excited about this defensive line. What does that mean about how you feel about this offensive line? He's like, well, yeah, that's the other side of it. But I think those other things that you're seeing from him, just like the motor, the effort, you're looking for those fundamental qualities that even guys who have been good defensive ends here don't always haven't always shown as it relates to their pass rush and things like that. Like, those are good traits to see. And the reason that it's a Mike Hall comparison is it's another guy, like, very similar recruiting profile in terms of like where he was ranked and stuff. Took a redshirt season. I don't think he was all that happy about it, and now he gets to unleash it, and he's got an opportunity. They need more depth there. They need somebody to step up and be the guy who's behind Tua Maloau and behind Sawyer. And again, the way that Larry Johnson rotates those guys, there's always the opportunity that to prove yourself worthy of being higher in that rotation.
Yeah, I think you did it a good way where you kind of, I'm going to drive the bus, but I'm still like on alert. You're not fully out the gate with it, because we've also kind of seen this before every spring while offensive linemen are trying to figure out blocking concepts and all that stuff. The defensive line just has a field day, because Jack Sawyer had a heck of a day too. I mean, there were some reps where he just took Zen Maholsky by the shoulder patch and just backed him straight up into the quarterback. And there was nothing that Zen could really do about it. But I did think So the way I wanted to look at Kenyatta Jackson, because he flashed, he is flexible. And Zach Harrison, and I'll even throw Chase in there, they're not the most flexible defensive ends. Chase's get off is just ridiculous, so it's why he was able to beat everybody. But him and Zach are not the most bendy defensive ends at that size, the way Kenyatta was, the way Joey does. And even, I mean, Nick Bosa, I mean, he's doing stretching drills right before, you know, play snap off.
I think Joey is the bendiest guy maybe that I've been around, and that it was like the get off that looked like Nick, but the bend, like Miles Garrett is the bendiest bender that's ever been.
Like, he literally is parallel with the field a lot of times. Yeah. So it's, I think that's what's part of why the sacks haven't, there's a lot of reasons, but that's a little detail that you don't think about is, yes, Zach Harrison has some talent. Chase Young, wow. But they're not really bendy all like that to where the speed rush is always going to work. And with Kenyatta Jackson, it was like, nope, get your hands off me, bend a little bit. I'm around the tackle and I've got a sack. And it was time. It was a couple of times, even when they were doing, you know, O-line, D-line, winner, loser drills where he was doing at the tackles. And so I think that's what makes him so interesting when you're talking about sack guys, is he has a skill set that really we haven't seen from an elite defensive end since maybe Bosa, that level of a bendy guy.
All right, Nathan, another guy to you. Who do you want to talk about? By the way, the Ohio State women are leading UConn right now.
They are.
This 21-17. Is their Alabama moment. It's their Alabama moment. The press, they just got another steal. Man. Okay, go ahead, Nathan. By the way, the men are not playing.
None of the Big Ten men are playing, by the way.
Correct. Well, I don't know. I might just text it. I did say, I don't know if men's basketball is a top 10 sport in the Big Ten right now. And I tweeted that partially to be mean, but also because I actually think it might be true, because definitely women's basketball is better. Both hockeys are better. Wrestling is better. Football is better. I have to look into men's and women's swimming and diving. I don't know about like maybe softball, right? The lacrosse is, I think lacrosse might be, I have to, so now by the end of it, it may be like men's basketball is the 17th best Big Ten sport, but for now, we'll stay on football. Nathan, who's the guy you want to talk about?
So to go to another guy who I don't know what his path to a role is, I thought Gabe Powers, as we're looking for guys who have an opportunity this spring to make some noise. You know, he hasn't had much of a role yet. And now with Eichenberg out for the spring, he's one of the linebackers that gets those reps. And I thought he had multiple PBUs during that red zone passing period that I was talking about. It was another play later in the scrimmage where he stepped up and made a big stop. Just a guy who almost has gotten forgotten a little bit because you come in at the same time as Hicks. It's a little bit similar to like Henderson and Pryor on the running back side, where like two guys are coming in at the same time. They're both highly ranked relative to the rest of college football, but because one guy's way up at the top and he's the one that all the anticipation is about, Gabe Powers kind of folds in to the mess of people. And again, because of Chambers and Eichenberg in front and Cody Simon, who Jim Knowles has talked positively about so far this spring, and CJ Hicks also trying to, like, I don't know where Gabe Powers fits, but I saw him out there making plays, and that's what you look for. Second year guys starting to assert themselves in the spring, he seems on schedule. That may be a schedule that still requires a lot of patience from him, that maybe it's more of a 2024 conversation before he makes a big impact. But you want to see that guys are on schedule. They aren't being held back necessarily by not being there yet. It's just that what Steven was talking about before, like Steel Chambers was showing up and playing like a fifth-year athletic senior linebacker should play, and it's going to be a hard job to win for anybody below him.
Gabe Powers gave me the linebacker version of Jaden Ballard vibes in terms of, you're saying he's on schedule. He came in, for starters, Gabe Powers was a five-star linebacker, potentially the number one linebacker when he first committed, and then things obviously changed. And CJ Hicks was like a four-star, so like things change. That's how rankings go. But it just feels like there was something there that I saw today where you're like, okay, it's a year away. It's a year away if the light can ever come on. And we're seeing that with Jaden Ballard right now in the wide receiver room. We'll see what it means whenever that room is healthy and full again. But at least you're starting to see some of the stuff that you thought it could be, even if the journey to get there was a little bit longer than the guys he came in with.
So Cody Simon and Steel Chambers are the linebackers with the first group right now, because Tommy Eichenberg is not taking part in spring football. So you look out and the ones, and it's Steel Chambers and Cody Simon most of the time. And then most of the time with the twos, it's Gabe Powers at Mike and CJ Hicks at Will. And I thought the same thing at linebacker that I thought at safety, which is like, I don't know, if they were the ones, that'd be fine. So I was having a conversation with somebody. It's one of these things where Ohio State brought back 2 fifth-year linebackers. That's great. And it's also like, oh, they brought back 2 fifth-year linebackers, which is like you would never wish that away. But it's also like, well, if they didn't have them, I don't know. If you were telling me you're going to figure it out with Cody Simon, Gabe Powers, and CJ Hicks, and those are the 3 linebackers who are going to play the most, I don't know. That's kind of exciting too. So Tommy Eichenberg was awesome last year. Tommy Eichenberg, this is taking nothing away from him. And Steven already covered how good Steel Chambers looked. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that makes me excited about this, Nathan, because also, you know, who we saw kind of roaming around doing his thing today is James Laurinaitis. I think he might've been wearing leggings. He just had like stretchy pants on. I didn't ask him if they were leggings. He looks good. He looks nice. But I said to James Laurinaitis afterward, I said, what were you doing being a broadcaster? What is wrong with you? Why did you, like, you're supposed to be doing this. You're a coach. That's 2 great projects, Nathan. Maybe it's more for 2024. But if you're, it's like, well, what's James Laurinaitis here to do? It is to turn Gabe Powers and CJ Hicks into 2 all Big Ten linebackers so that whenever their time is, when they get that chance, they are more than ready for it. Ah, I like that, Nathan.
Well, it's tantalizing. And listen, we just went through this a couple years ago where you had the top shelf of linebackers and then this class of linebackers below them, some of them very highly ranked. But I'm not sure that we ever really got the flashes from that group where people were getting excited about them. And it explained in part why they weren't able to ever really push through and why none of them ended their career at Ohio State, though there are very good football players there. So I think, again, you could talk about the linebackers this way. You can talk about the part of the receiver core this way. There's some key guys who we know are going to get a lot, if not all, the snaps that matter this fall who aren't out there right now. Although Tommy Eichenberg was out there today. I saw him full pads, helmet. He had a ball under his arm. Like, he was out there on the field. While things are going on at one end of the field, he was trying to be out there in the middle of it. You can tell that it's probably tearing him apart to have to be on the sideline this spring. But you see what's coming. And I think it's all just a matter of monitoring who's on schedule. If you get to this point, to this spring, and people aren't being talked about the right way, that usually sets off alarm bells. But kind of across the board, you were hearing the right people get talked about today. I thought the first thing we opened with today was a competitive period over on the sideline that I couldn't even see exactly. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it was offense, defense.
Some type of agility drill.
Yeah. But it was like head-to-head. Yeah. It was head-to-head offense, defense, like one player at a time. And you would hear, like, some names that you want to hear coming out of there. Like, you know, Jermaine Matthews' name, I think, came out of there. Jermaine Matthews won his period, whoever he was head-to-head against. Tristan Gebbia won his period, which I thought was funny because all the other quarterbacks were, like, out of the drill, but he got in there and represented the quarterbacks and apparently won his period. But, like, you're hearing the right names a lot of times this spring for the depth that this team might want, but also for what we've already talked about is going to be a big transition into 2024. They're going to flip this thing over. All those fifth-year guys will be gone, and then it's going to be in the hands of these guys that we're talking about. And kind of what we were saying in relation to this transfer concept a couple weeks ago on the pod, that the reward for the patience that you put in and the work that you put in is potentially huge. You've just got to be ready when that opportunity comes.
All right, Steven Means, who else you want to talk about?
I'm going to creep over to your side since you did the same thing to me. You brought it up, I think, three pods ago, the idea of can Jaylen Ballard take some Julian Fleming snaps. I was against that idea. I think I'm coming around to your side. The pro day's pro day, but, like, I mean, he kind of flashed. And there were some NFL guys who were like, ooh, with him just because of that speed. And some of the stuff he was doing today, whether it was against zone or obviously we know he is a burner, I don't see how there's not a situation where he can give you 15 snaps where that's like, cause he just brings something that everybody else doesn't bring. And you really saw it today on multiple occasions where it's just like, if your technique is off just a little bit at that line of scrimmage, he's gone. And whether it was Kyle McCord or Devin Brown, they were hitting him on the money.
The ones most of the time with the receivers on Saturday were Marvin Harrison Jr., Jaden Ballard, and Rhys Stocksdale, the walk-on in the slot because Xavier Johnson wasn't there in Emeka Buka. Xavier Johnson was not participating in today. We're just stating the facts. Mm-hmm. Nothing's wrong with Xavier Johnson. And then Emeka's out. But Jaden Ballard, Stephen, like, did not look out of place. It wasn't like, oh, why is nine with the ones? It's like, no, nine's with the ones. And so that idea, it's one of those things. I think coaches talk about this a lot. Brian Hartline certainly does. Prove to me you should play. It goes back to like, it's like KJ Hill took every snap in the slot the one year. And it was like, hey, why didn't you play the other guys? And Brian Hartline was like, who am I supposed to play? Earn it. Show me. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing wrong with Julian Fleming. But if Jaden Ballard says, hey, I need a piece. I earned in now year three. I earned a piece of that. I think, Steven, Brian Hartline's going to give him a piece.
Yeah, and Brian Day got asked about Jaden Ballard, and he kind of talked about it that way, where it was like, he's got to. This year, and he had to kind of learn, you know. Yeah, he came in with Marvin Harrison and Emeka Buka, who are very good too, but he's got to remember he's good too. Even it's just a different development track, but if he's on schedule, I'm coming over that. I don't know if it's a bus or just like a bus stop, but I might be joining you on that bench over there because I saw enough today where it's like Marvin, Emeka, and Julian don't have that. I think they're all great receivers in their own right, but they don't stretch the defense in a way that he does. And I think that's a lot more valuable in a year where you know everybody's going to sell out on trying to stop Marvin Harrison for getting the ball. How do you combat that? By having a guy that you have to think about who might take your top off if you don't pay attention to him.
Okay, let's go to another receiver that I thought you were going to take, Steven, but I want to talk about Carnell Tate. And when asked about him afterward, Ryan Day talked about his competitiveness, and he is a scrappy mamma jamma. Like, he gets after it. And there were moments. So he was basically Marvin Harrison's backup X in the scrimmage on Saturday. And then they pulled Marvin out of some stuff because it's okay. Marv doesn't need any more practice. And Carnell Tate just like, he just gets after it. And there was a drill where they were doing some special team stuff where I think it was like sort of working on gunner kind of things, just getting down the field and battling a guy. And Carnell Tate is a scrappy dude in situations like that. And he just, it isn't necessarily even, Nathan, about like hands or skill or route running, whatever. It's just, hey, guy who just got here, let's put you in with the ones in a scrimmage and see what happens. And every fiber of Carnell Tate's being is like, let's go. And I think they see that. We saw it. And if we're starting to talk about, hey, well, I don't know, what's your two deep? And we know at receiver is going to be Marvin, Julian, and Emeka. We know Jaden's in there. We know Xavier Johnson's in there. That's five that we kind of know, right? That's the top five. Can I throw out Carnell Tate for the sixth spot? Can I throw out Carnell Tate for, not that they're rotating, not that it's like, hey, Marv, we got this freshman guy who's going to. No, it's not that. But I don't know, Nathan. Like, it's just who's out there. He just got here, and there is, it seems from our eyeballs, like no part of this that is he is bothered by.
Yeah, you're looking for guys who don't shy away from the moment. Not that, again, the moment on March 25th when the stakes aren't exactly that high and where you literally don't have a job to win. Like, you're not going to unseat Marvin Harrison Jr. But like the moment, the play, the part where you're locked up with a guy, that is a moment. And it's a big moment when you just got on campus and maybe you're matched up with Denzel Burke. Maybe you're matched up with Davis and Igbinosin, who's looked, you know, impressive just in terms of physique and some of the results out there. And like, do you stand up for yourself? Do you go out there and assert yourself, or do you shy away from the moment? And I think that those are things that carry through. It carries through for the two deep, what you're talking about, but it carries through for, you know, trying to catch that early flash from someone and know who's coming in a year when this offense, again, the offense, that whole receiver corps is going to turn over. I think those are important things. That's what a coach is looking for as much as anything, because it tells you that's an easier thing to replicate sometimes. Like, that guy gives 100% effort. That guy is tough. That guy is smart, knows what he's supposed to do and executes it. Like, all those things are more important than what happens sometimes when the ball comes your way, because there are X factors out of your control at that point.
Led by Carnell Tate, I thought the freshman receivers, and Brendan Innes was here today. He's been here all week, just hanging out and being in the meetings and stuff. I said it with the DBs. I'll say it here. They backed up the way they've been, that the coaching staff has talked about them in terms of pushing those second year guys. Anytime they went with the twos and even the threes, you saw a lot of Carnell Tate. You saw a lot of Noah Rogers. You even saw a lot of Bryson Rogers. While consistently the only second-year guys you saw were Caleb Burton and Kojo Antwi. So in the name of these true freshmen might be here to jump some guys and take some spots, Carnell Tate just seems to be the leader in that right now of being able to do that. Now we'll see what happens, obviously, when Innes gets here this summer. But I did like what I saw from Carnell Tate.
It felt like more often than not, again, the ones, just with who is available today, Marvin Harrison Jr., Reese Stocksdale, and Jaden Ballard. The twos, Carnell Tate, Noah Rogers, both of them true freshmen, and Caleb Brown, a second-year guy.
Yeah.
And then more often than not, it felt like the threes, Kojo Antwi would be in there, and Bryson Rogers would be in there with the threes. So again, that's just, that doesn't mean that's exactly where everything is, but it's just noticing Carnell Tate getting a lot of run when it mattered. So make note. All right, Nathan, another guy for you.
Honestly, I was so focused on the quarterbacks, it's probably more informative if I pass to you guys, because I think you guys were spread out in your focus a little more.
All right. I'll pass to you, Steven.
I think we came out the first practice and we were really excited about the physical being we saw with Davis and Igbinosin, because he didn't look like any of the other corners. He looked bigger. I'm backing off some of that today because I thought he was good. I thought he had a good day. I thought he broke up some passes and had some moments, but he also had some moments where it's clear he's still trying to figure out what he's doing, and he wasn't always necessarily in the right spot, and Tim Walton would be chewing him out. But I thought man-to-man coverage, he was excellent today. Even when he was kind of matched up with Jaden Ballard and Marvin Harrison, I think he held his own. Really, him and Denzel Burke maybe more than anybody else stood out to me.
No, I think that's fair. Again, Denzel looks ready for the moment. Denzel Burke, I think, just looks like, okay, like, do you want to line Marvin Harrison Jr. up against me 400 times today? Let's go. Like, and so, but Davidson and Magnussen, again, you can see it. Corners getting hands on balls. I think I agree with everything there. Let's go. I think we have to talk about offensive line. I did spend a lot of time talking offensive, looking at the offensive line. So Tegra Tshabola and Zed Mihalski basically split right tackle during everything that happened during the practice on Saturday. Just so people know, like, nobody else is splitting anything. It's Josh Fryer, Donovan Jackson, Carson Hinsman, and Matthew Jones are the guys who are always with the ones at the other offensive line spots. And then most of the time, at least on Saturday, left tackle with the twos. This is the two offensive line. It's George Fitzpatrick at left tackle, Ben Chrisman at left guard, Vic Cutler, the transfer at center, and Toby Wilson, Kevin Wilson's son, at right guard. That's how it was most of the time with the twos on Saturday. But that Tshabola Mihalski thing is just a they're in, they're out. And I did just think Tegra Tshabola, who's the year younger and the, you know, the higher rated recruit, just maybe looks like he's growing into something here. So the battle is not won. It is a rotation. I thought the way they kind of moved, I would say I thought the day went similar at right tackle as it did at quarterback, which is they really pretty much shared it. But then by the end, it felt like one guy came on a little bit at the end of practice, and it was Kyle McCord at quarterback, and I thought it was Tegra Tshabola at right tackle, whatever that is. We're not drawing conclusions, but just that battle's going to continue, but that's the guy that I would kind of continue to keep your eye on there. Just the other things offensively, I'll just jump in here real quick. The Jelani Thurman experience continues to be something that I am in. We are all going to be super intrigued by. And they did, Steven, end up throwing that ball to him. Again, they're in the red zone. The offense is trying to win. And they throw a little pass to Jelani Thurman, who gets it and goes and looks like he's scored the winning touchdown. Everybody celebrates and they mark him down at the 1 yard line. I guess they went to the replay booth. What are they? Is there a secret replay in the Woody somewhere? They went over and they had a conference and it was like, oh no. But, you know, that's Jelani Thurman working with the twos in there. He's not with the twos. Cade Stover's the number one tight end. There was a lot of Joe Royer and G. Scott, right? When they went, they did some 12. G. Scott kind of had a funny moment. There was G. Scott sort of dropped the ball at one point, and then another moment he made a nice catch. And just with guys sort of colliding, it sort of be like no tackling in this period, but he got knocked down by a safety. Nobody tackled him, but he got knocked down. And then he stood up and like signaled first down. It was like, all right. And it was like, all right, G, we do your thing, man. So I did. And then there was an option pitch where like Joe Royer like cleared out a lane on the right side. And I think Chip Traynham took off down the sidelines. Like, okay, Joe Royer, do your thing. So I do think it looks like it's Cade Stover. It's G Scott and Joe Royer, Steven. But when Jelani Thurman's on the field, it's hard for your eyes not to go to him. And he did get some work with the twos because I think they're trying to see what this kid's, how he feels in the moment in his first spring practice as a freshman.
Everything we said about Sonny Styles and CJ Hicks, copy and paste Jelani Thurman's name in there as well. He is a large tight end. He is long, another dude who just looks like a basketball player in pads. And I think you're missing the most important detail of that catch at the end of the run. I mean, he just put Kai Stokes on his butt. And that's the thing that's what made it so, you know, why everybody was so ramped up about it. It was, yes, they scored, but also he kind of had a highlight play in doing it. Once again, with him, it's going to be a really interesting 2024 once he learns how to block. Because there were some times where it's like, true freshman, doesn't really know where he's supposed to go there, but the ball-catching ability, the playmaking ability, I don't think that's going to be much of a problem for him. It's how quickly can he understand this blocking scheme.
All right, when we come back on Buckeye Talk, we will wrap this up. Saturday scrimmage at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. What's one more thing we want to talk about? We'll do it next. All right, last thing here. Ryan Day didn't wear a headset on Saturday. And I checked with him and I said, is that the first time you ever were at a scrimmage at Ohio State where you didn't have a headset on? And he was like, yeah, I think that's probably right. So the deal is, right, you're calling plays. So Brian Hartline is wearing a headset. He's calling plays, but Justin Fry also has a headset on. So does Keenan Bailey. So does Corey Dennis. So does Tony Alford. They're all in there. They're taking part of it. And Ryan Day is not. And at the end of the practice, like they're in this red zone. Hey, it was like the last play. They go huddle on the two sidelines. Defense goes to one sideline. Offense is on the other side. And when they do it, Ryan Day walks over to the defense, which again, I don't think he probably ever did that before. And they didn't stay over there the whole time, but it kind of came back to the middle. And it is moderately driving him crazy to do that. He knows it is for everybody's best interests, for Brian Hartline to have the freedom to call that scrimmage, for Ryan Day to have the freedom to do other head coach things. And I was saying to people, I like that it's difficult, but that he is still doing it. Because he's not like, oh, thank God, I don't have to call plays anymore. He's like, I am dying. I can't believe this. Oh, I just want to call a play. But he didn't. And guess what? The offense functioned. So that is a giant deal, Nathan. We know, because this is not snap your fingers, I'm not the play caller anymore. This is a process. And we don't know 1,000% what the end result for the opening game is going to be. And guess what? Ryan Day is going to have a headset on the sideline. He's not there yet. He's not Brady Hoken it. He's not going to be no headset guy on the sideline. That he's not capable of yet. He's going to have a headset on. So we're not going to know exactly, well, what, how much was Ryan Day? How much was Brian Hartline? And they're not going to tell us. And Ryan Day probably shouldn't tell us. Well, you know what? Maybe like Brian had this, but I actually, you know, sort of led us this way on some situations. I was, you know, he'll decide maybe how much freedom in the moment, Nathan, right? Brian, you don't want to be like, I know exactly what play would work here. And Brian Hartline calls something else and you're like, oh my God, I remember, right? In 2017, I called that play in this situation and I thought it was going to work and it didn't. And I've learned that lesson. If you've learned lessons on behalf of Brian Hartline, tell him. Don't make Brian Hartline make the mistake that maybe you made. So in those situations, Nathan, he can do that. But I purposefully did it. I didn't want to ask in the group setting. Because like when I noticed he didn't have a headset on, I was like, oh my God, he doesn't have a headset on. It's a line in the sand, Nathan. It is this, and it's not just representative. It's like functional.
No, yeah.
He was not involved at all in the offensive play calling. So like, that's a huge deal. It is a sign of things to come. I personally think it is for the best for both the Ohio State program, for Ryan Day, for Brian Hartline and everybody involved. And this was a step in that on Saturday, Nathan.
Yeah. A sign of things to come, but not symbolic, because I imagine he probably had to have the headset off in order. You know what I mean? Like if you keep the headset on, but you're just like, but I'm not going to do anything, I'm going to be quiet. Like, how long do you think that lasts? It's like anything else. He's talked about that sort of thing before. Like, yeah. Well, I started off like not being over with the offense, and then before I knew it, I'm back where I always am. And listen, spring is the time to make mistakes. Spring is the time to make a mistake, and then you go look at it on film and you say, well, this is what should have happened. And they do that obviously during the season too. But here it's about getting all the mistakes, trying to smooth all the mistakes out, so when you get to the fall, you're not making them as much. And that process applies to the coaches in this instance as much as it does the players.
Yeah, I do think he probably had notes throughout the day that he would have loved to be on the headset and say, but if you don't have a headset, you can't say them. And it's kind of like giving yourself muscle memory, so then when you do get to this fall, if this holds and Brian Hartline ends up being the play caller, you're not talking. You're not giving those notes in the middle of the second quarter about, you know, maybe you should have done something this way. It's like getting out of the way. I did notice, since I was watching the defense today, he was with the defense a lot more than I remember him ever being. Like, there were times where I'm like, what are you doing down here? It's like, but he would be, I don't want to say shadowing Jim Knowles, but it's like they're both talking to the defense. And the way that sometimes you would see him kind of get on the quarterbacks, because that's the position he knows and he likes to put them in that fire, he was doing that with the defensive players.
Go listen to the show that Shahan and I did about coaches in their primes in college football. And I talked a lot about Ryan Day on that podcast and where I think growth is happening. And one of the other things is, right, Steven, there were a gazillion recruits there today. Mm-hmm. And so when Ryan Day, now during practice, he wasn't recruiting, but when Ryan Day, he's not absorbed in his offensive
interact a little bit more.
Mindset. Offense was not his primary concern on a day of an Ohio State spring practice scrimmage. And I think that never happened before. And then when offense is not his primary concern, recruiting moves up the list. Team culture moves up the list. His relationship with the defense moves up the list. And in the end, I think that is good. All right. I don't think we'll be back on Monday because we did this today. But guess what? We're going to talk to more people next week. We're going to learn more things next week. We're going to continue covering Ohio State spring football practice. And make sure you guys go to cleveland.com/OSU where you'll find stories about some of these same things, about some different things that maybe we didn't talk about. And again, this was a great day for Tech. Bing, bang, boom. If you're a Tech subscriber, a lot of the things that you just heard us say, you already read on the text hours and hours and hours ago. So 614-350-3315 if you want to be part of that. By the time you listen to this, maybe you will know the result, but the Ohio State women are beating UConn at the half. This is their Alabama game. Ohio State football has beaten Alabama once. It was not peak Bama, right? It was Blake Sims quarterback Bama, but it's beating Bama. Ohio State women's basketball has never beaten UConn. This is not peak UConn, but it's still UConn. If it happened, it's the biggest win since 1993 for the Ohio State women's basketball program. And just like as a reminder, Ohio State men might lose a player to the NBA without making the NCAA. So there you have it. Okay. Thanks, you guys,
Doug,
for listening.
Doug, since we're talking about basketball, yes, should we maybe do a quick bracket update?
Oh, you're so humble. Do you know, name the mascot of Florida Atlantic. Name the mascot. What's their mascot?
They are the Owls, and it's a fitting mascot because when we would go to Florida, right near the condo place where we would stay, my wife's family had, there was this little hole where like a grate of some kind where like owls had made a nest there. And there was a sign there that said, do not molest the owls.
Oh, and that's why you picked Florida Atlantic to make the Final Four.
Wait, what?
That's not why I picked them to make the Final Four, but it's, I wanted to get this on the record
but
here.
You did.
I did.
But you did pick Florida Atlantic to make the Final Four. I don't know how you did it. The molesting owl story actually makes sense. What did you do otherwise? Break down their backcourt and be like, I really like how these guys play. Name a Florida Atlantic player.
Oh, I definitely can't do that. but that's not saying much. I can't do that for most of this. I'm not going to pretend that I had a year where I scrutinized college basketball heavily and came up with this bracket. I just crunched some numbers and this is what seemed to make sense. So it's worked out so far.
Some numbers, aka had a memory about them talking about not molesting the owls.
Yeah. And
you picked the way my girlfriend picks brackets.
Yeah. That would be I feel like you should go to their game. If they make the Final Four, you should go to Houston and wear a don't molest the owls t-shirt.
I agree.
Maybe like all right. Florida Atlantic.
Buckeye Talk can send me there.
So Nathan is
on the budget.
You are, what do you think you are in our bracket with 370 Buckeye Talk Tech subscribers as part of it?
I'm tied for first right now with someone named Anthony, whose bracket is JSN's Good Hammy. And I think he's going to win because, so my champion is Gonzaga. His champion is Connecticut. After having actually watched basketball, I think there's a good chance of Connecticut not only wins this game, but may win the whole thing. They look really good. So he is in good shape. He also has Texas and Kansas State in his Final Four. So he got three of the four Final Fours. Oh. He got Alabama knocked out last night. He's got UConn over Kansas for the championship. So he's in great shape. He has had a great bracket. But he and I are tied for first right now. And Eric, who believes in square cut pizza, is 1 point behind us in third place.
Oh, he's been disqualified, by the way. I'm 63rd. I do have Texas winning it all. Okay. So if Texas wins, I think I'll finish in the top 10. Steven, do you know where you are in the bracket?
No, but I know that I had Houston winning and that fellowship fell to shambles. And I think my bracket's kind of over with.
Yeah, I was kind of in on Texas. So I like that. Yeah, I think also, by the way, nobody's going to watch the Final Four. It's like, hey, great, all this crazy stuff. And it's like, hey, awesome. Who's excited for Kansas State and Creighton and Gonzaga and Miami? Cool. Congratulations, all people like upsets. You know why people like Butler making the NCAA tournament final? Because they played Duke. That's what made it fun.
Yeah.
A bunch of Cinderellas. When you have too many Cinderellas.
Is it really a Cinderella?
No Cinderellas.
If everybody's, yeah. It can't be a Cinderella if all the Cinderellas made it.
It's just you've got to have somebody at the ball for Cinderella to play against.
Yeah.
Right? You got to have the evil stepmother. I don't know. What is Duke? Is Duke an evil stepmother or Prince Charming? I know what Duke people would say. So like that. Otherwise, it's just people sitting in a room wearing one shoe. Who cares? Okay. Congratulations, Nathan. Nathan was like, oh, I got to get out of here. Let's try to keep the podcast short. And then he was like, but wait, I'm tied for first. No, I should have noted that. Cause I like, as soon as I saw Nathan to practice today, I was like, you have Florida Atlantic in the Final Four. Don't molest the Owls.
Don't molest the Owls.
Buckeye Talk. All right. Thanks to you guys for making Buckeye Talk part of your week. We think we'll see you back here on Tuesday. We don't think it'll be Monday, but who knows? For now, for Nathan Baird and Stephen Means, I'm Doug Lee Maurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.